Good day. Good day is not going to be my... I'm trying to find an opening for this podcast. Like, all the cool DJs and podcast hosts, they have, like, a cool intro. I don't have one. I'm trying to work on that. So if anybody has any ideas, I don't think good day is going to be it, though. Hello, everyone. You're listening to the Jeff Bryan Show. I'm Jeff. And, yeah, let's get into it. Lots to talk about. I always say that. Of course, I have a lot to talk about. I have a podcast where I just talk. So... why else would I do that unless I have a lot to talk about? The theme of today's show is going to largely revolve around the New York Post story that was taken down last week on social media, on Facebook, on Twitter, kind of what happened there, why it happened, why it's a big deal. And that leads us to a bigger conversation as to the kind of fake news epidemic, what it means, like what do we do about it, who the players are, why it's happening, what the aim is. Hopefully I can be so structured in my podcast as I just was in my intro. I doubt I will be, knowing me. Let's get into it. So last week, the New York Post published an article pertaining to Hunter Biden's laptop. He dropped it off for repair, I believe in Ohio or Long Island, can't remember where, and never picked it up. The hard drive, Hunter, so that's Joe's son, was eventually given over to the FBI. The the computer repairman also kind of sounds like a little bit of a kook, conspiracy theorist, not sure. Made a copy of it and gave it to Rudy Giuliani. I don't know how that connection was made. But nonetheless, there were some pretty, I don't know, let's say interesting things about Hunter on this computer. The biggest of which is his relationship to an energy company in the Ukraine where he sits on the board. Not really clear why Hunter would sit on the board of an energy company, considering he knows nothing about energy. He's making like $50,000 a month. And the kind of idea here is maybe the energy company was paying him that so he could bend his dad's ear, and there was some sort of relationship there. There have been other things that have come out since suggesting there's more nefarious stuff going on here between Joe and Hunter, and money and scandal and blah, blah, blah. I don't really want to get into the story too much because, frankly, it's kind of business as usual through my eyes as far as a story that will come out before an election that looks to slander one person, you know, or makes to look one person bad, make them look bad. It's nothing new. We've seen this from all the different media outlets since I was born. You know, it's just like this is how it works. So is it a little sketchy, the story? Absolutely. Who knows, you know, what's going on here? It definitely doesn't... ring of purity to me, let's say. But at the same time, nobody's denied it. Hunter hasn't denied it. Joe hasn't denied it. And the New York Post is a publication that a lot of people say, they're a tabloid. It's like, not really. I work in financial news. And I guess I should talk about this if anybody's new to the podcast here. I'm a what you call a qualitative analyst and a news analyst. I work for a market intelligence firm. Understanding the quality of news is quite literally my job. We often use the New York Post. They often break stories. I think they've broke probably 3 or 4 in the last 10 days. It may not sound like many, but when you're talking about the news flow in this specific niche, that's actually a lot. In fact, I think the New York Post has broken more stories in the last 10 days as it pertains to finance than the New York Times. So my point here is they do real investigative journalism. They do have real sources. They do push stuff that often proves to be true. And there's no reason to censor them the way that this story ended up getting censored. So Facebook, Twitter, they both basically applied a whole new set of rules to this story that they've never applied before and effectively made the dissemination on social media impossible. So what's that really mean? What's going on? Why did that happen? And what does this mean for the future of kind of news via social media? Well, a lot of people have been like, well, don't get your news through social media. Well, that cat's out of the bag. Like 83% of America or something like that gets their news via social media. I may have that statistic wrong. Anybody can Google it. It's a lot. So that we're not going to fix the problem by just saying, hey, don't look at social media for news. So whatever, you know, we need to put that aside. A lot of people have said, well, we need to vet the quality of news before it can be disseminated. Good point. We do, and I'm going to get into that later. But what we can't have happen is just because a story leans the wrong way from tech's eyeballs, meaning Facebook and Twitter, they obviously are more supportive of Joe Biden than Donald Trump, doesn't mean they can apply a different set of rules. It doesn't mean they can just, or they can, doesn't mean they should apply a different set of rules. And that's what's really scary here is they've kind of weaponized their censoring powers arbitrarily. There was legitimately no reason to pull this story off of social media. Again, except for the fact it pertained to Joe Biden and not Donald Trump, which obviously, like I said, tech leans to the left heavily. No reason to pull this thing down. It was, you know, yes, it was citing kind of unnamed sources. It was a little vague. It was a little sketchy. But that's a lot of journalism. A lot of journalism cites sources that cannot be named. A lot of journalism, frankly, proves to be wrong. And that's just how it goes. And I'm not just talking about from sketchy sources. The Atlantic had a pretty poor piece on Trump, I don't know, a month ago. And they were wrong about the whole thing, but nobody seemed to pull that one down even to this day. You can talk about that, post that, whatever. They're not going to censor it. So obviously, accuracy is maybe not the end-all be-all here. Generally, if a news article goes up that's not quite accurate, Facebook has a third party that fact checks. Now, I think they lean incredibly left. I don't think it's the best quality of fact checking, but I appreciate the idea. And they'll put like a little asterisk or a little bar above it saying, hey, this may be out of context or this may not be telling the whole story, but you can still share it. You can still check it out. And I think this is what's most important, is that we can at least see the news. Now, everybody's going to go, well, what about Russia? What about China? What about North Korea or Iran? And really meddling about on social media. We're going to get into that. We're going to get into a solution later. However, again, I just want it to be really, really clear, or I just want to be really, really clear why this is different and what it could mean for the future of media. So let's say I write something and it pertains to something Facebook or Twitter deems not to be as valuable. Well, they've kind of taken my free speech away in the way that other people have free speech. Again, I know they're private companies, but this has become so big, I don't know where kind of a First Amendment angle falls into all this. Because if you take away my voice on social media fully, I've lost really a lot of volume, let's say. It's like taking me from a 8 on volume down to a 1 or a 0.5. I can't get a message out. And if that's true for media companies, if they somehow are banned, I mean, right now, New York Post can't post to Twitter still because of this. And there's no reason for that. Again, the story, Joe hasn't said this is false. Hunter hasn't said this is false. There's no reason at the moment to suggest that the New York Post was out of line posting this, or maybe we'll be proven wrong. But at the moment, shouldn't it be something where we can all make heads or tails of this ourselves and not have some, you know, guardian that has a political affiliation making that decision for us? I mean, what this opens ourselves up to is complete manipulation by the media companies based on what their desired company is. I'm sorry, not by the media. The desired outcome by the social media companies based on what their desired outcome of an event may be. That should scare you. I think it's already been shown how easily we're all manipulated by social media. I mean, this is why I have this show, quite frankly, is I am a news analyst. I do feel very confident when it comes to understanding, or at least being skeptical of news, or trying to like look at news from multiple angles. And I see people on the left and the right continuing to post stuff that's frankly garbage. It's so skewed one way or another. And so this is, again, why I have this show. And it's kind of what we need. We need people that are going to be skeptical of any kind of news. And I'm not saying we should take this New York Post story hook, line, and sinker and run with it. I'm saying be skeptical of it, but let's all see it. There should be no reason that somebody in an ivory tower at Facebook decides that, you know what, I don't like that one. I'm not going to post it. I'm not going to allow it to be disseminated, or Twitter. Now, Twitter said that the reason they're doing this is because it's quote-unquote hacked material. Huh, funny. WikiLeaks was easily distributed on Twitter among, I don't know, 5 or 6 other hacks. So clearly that's not – not only that, this didn't involve hacking. Hunter Biden gave him the password, gave him the computer, gave him the hard drive. It's like – he just didn't pick it up, and he didn't reply to any phone calls, and it was turned over to somebody else. That's not hacking. That's just being an idiot. There's a difference. So this brings us to a much bigger conversation, which is how do we vet news? How do we solve this problem? Well, I'm what you'd call like a libertarian liberal or a moderate. So that means I would rather put that power in the people's hands, and we all have to up our game when it comes to being skeptical of news. We have to check our identity politics at the door, and we have to be able to look at news objectively and skeptically across the board. I don't care which way you lean or what you want to have happen. That's a key, you know, thing right there. It's like we all go into news being like, you know, an example is A lot of people don't want climate change to be real, so they look for every way for it not to be real. Well, that's not a good way to be a skeptic. That's a way to show your bias. Instead, you should be looking at climate change like, well, what is it? What is the science saying? What can we do about it? How might the science be wrong? How might it be right? What do the solutions look like? Where are we with it? Should we spend money? All these questions just be going through your mind all the time when you're trying to learn about something, as opposed to, well, it would negatively impact my life, so let me show how I'm right that it is wrong or something. So this is like the first key in the anecdote, let's say, to this problem, is we need to be better at digesting our news. We need to be better at critiquing our news. We need to ask the news companies to do a better job. This is key. And again, that all starts with checking your desired outcome at the door. If you're not willing to do that, it is impossible to digest, you know, really, let's say, news that gets at the truth, you know. So I think that's one of the biggest things we need to be looking to do. We also need to evoke the power of conversation more. You know, I'm a dick online. I know that. But my goal isn't to be a dick. My goal is that people, A, think more critically, B, come back at me with real objective thought, not name calling, not calling me a dick or whatever. I always thought social media would be kind of like a college classroom environment. I know it's just totally a pie in the sky wish where, you know, if you wanted to have like some sort of discourse with the professor or with an TA, there we go. RA is at the dorms, right? TA is the teacher assistant. Anyway, if you want some sort of discourse or a different a student, whatever, it was encouraged. And there was sort of this dynamic where everybody grew as a result. That's what I want. And that's what I think we should all be aiming for, is like, let's make these journalists that are doing such a shitty job do a better job. And that's going to happen through, again, more critical thought, more skepticism, and turning to people that you know are that way. You know, I'm going to be honest, I am that way. I know people think I lean incredibly far to the right. I don't. Like I said, if anything, I'm in the middle or a little left in social issues, but I'm more libertarian with fiscal issues, blah, blah, blah. And I can get into why I have those values. But the point is like, I'm going to look at this less with an eyeball that has less to do with my desired outcome and more what is really going on. Okay, and the third way we need to tackle this is through an independent ratings agency and the utilization of artificial intelligence, tech, that sort of thing. So first, an independent ratings agency, I'm not just asking for one, I'm asking for multiple. This is common in finance. I think of S&P and Moody's, the way they rate debt. I think we could do the exact same thing for news sources. I think we could do a quarterly report, and this would kind of give weight to the accuracy, the validity, the purity, let's say, of the journalism a certain media outlet's doing. And I think this could also be mixed in with some real-time kind of fact-checking, that sort of thing, again, by these same entities. These entities would be built specifically based on their integrity and their willingness to be objective in the way that they're reading news, the exact same way S&P and Moody's is incredibly objective giving debt ratings. And the only way I think this really all ties together is if the incentives are in the right place for Facebook and Twitter to step in and pay the money for these agencies to do their thing on their platforms. And the only way we're going to do that is if there's some sort of liability that they have to manage and mitigate for allowing these sort of things to manipulate us humans. You know, I think this is a big part of it. I mean, I could go a step further with all of this and ask that these tech companies are just more transparent across the board. I just don't think that's going to happen with respect to the algorithms they use and everything there. Though I think that's just as much the problem. And then on the tech and AI side, I think there needs to be more money spent on, you know, again, liability is kind of the big thing here. As long as Facebook and Twitter continue to operate with no sort of lawsuit, good luck getting to pay for anything. But, you know, if they are held accountable for the them allowing, you know, these nefarious actors, Russia, China, whoever, to meddle and screw this up so we don't trust news anymore, we don't trust what we're seeing, and this is something that could be tackled using smart artificial intelligence, smart tech guys, smart programmers, etc. I think this needs to be addressed. I think that needs to be a lot of where Facebook is spending their money. I know they are. I know Twitter's doing the same, but it's not to the degree they should. And the final thing on the kind of in this sphere is we need to tie identity to your social account more closely. I think it's kind of a joke that I can go right now and create a fake Facebook account, like literally right now. And I could run that for a while. I could have many Facebook accounts and they probably wouldn't catch me. I think you need to be uploading an ID, a passport, social security number, something. Now, I realize that exposes you to other sort of problems. But look, if this is just as powerful as a bank account or a credit card, which it is, then we need to treat it as such. We need to kind of get the bots out of the picture. And this is one easy way to do it. Again, that's what I think the anecdote is, but let's get into why this might seem to be a bigger problem as we turn the corner in the last few days of an election and going forward. So a couple things have come out in the last week that I encourage everybody to check out. I'm always going to say check out Sam Harris's latest podcast. Ironically, that goes right into this. It talks a lot about deep fakes and how deep fakes might, you know, so I don't know if, let me back up. If you don't know what a deep fake is, it is the ability to use a computer to make somebody say something or look like they did something when they didn't do it. I mean, just think about, you know, an example brought up is The Irishman. It's the Robert De Niro movie, Joe Pesci, where they de-age them. And the de-aging that Scorsese did in that movie has already been outdone by freeware that some dude like just posted an example to YouTube. So the point is like, The what used to be reserved for Hollywood is now in all of our hands, and it's the cat's out of the bag. And as a result, the idea of fake news becoming or people being able to make it seem as though somebody said or did something is going to be a problem, a big problem going forward, and it should concern us all. So that's kind of the next level. You know, this is kind of like right now what it appears to be happening, and I'm going to jump into the next piece that I watched and found to be very useful. Is called The Perfect Weapon, and it's kind of where we're at now with respect to fake news. So the new Sam Harris has, like I said, more to do with what's coming down the pipe maybe, and The Perfect Weapon has more to do with how is Russia, China, North Korea, Iran, other nefarious actors playing and meddling in our election, in our culture, in our society? What is their desired outcome? How are they doing it? And it's incredible how easy it is to manipulate us right now using social media. I mean, I can kind of go do this right now if I want to. I can post something and get a response. And it's so part of the blame is on Facebook and Twitter. Mostly I'd see Facebook in this case on their algorithms. Now, Twitter's just as bad with trying to like it. They know that people spend more time on page over conflict than over, hey, high five, have a good day. So the algorithms, in my opinion, seek out conflict. I know there are people that are recurring in my feed because Facebook knows there's likely going to be a conflict. I'm talking about you, Mallory. I'm not saying that mean, but I know Facebook puts this woman, Mallory's post in my feed because we have very differing viewpoints. We're very respectful to one another, but I spend more time commenting on a Mallory post than, you know, any of my dirt bike friends who just post a cool picture, because it's just like, high five, see you later. That doesn't do much for Facebook's time on page and ad revenue. So Facebook and Twitter are definitely part of the problem here. But the other part of the problem, obviously, is how easy it is to figure out a cultural issue and weaponize it. So that's really what The Perfect Weapon is about. And it was very interesting to find out that Russia specifically has taken aim at certain minorities, namely the black community, and has kind of radicalized them through various, let's say, massaged pieces of news, fake news, memes, whatever. And there's legitimately troll farms in Russia, in St. Petersburg, doing this. They are sitting there to try to evoke a visceral response from a community. Now, what do we see happening in America right now? Well, we see people at each other's throats. Everybody has this idea that this fake news thing is really to get Trump back in office. Well, first of all, the Steele dossier and the entire, you know, Trump and Russia collusion thing was proven to be false. So I mean, again, that probably was driven by Russia, ironically enough. So this idea that Russia wants Trump back in office, I'm not buying that. I don't think they want Biden in office either. What I think they want is to make us all perpetually question the integrity of the Republic. I think they want us at each other's throats. I think they want us to think this country sucks. I think that the idea is to create chaos. A country in chaos is a country that leaves the door open as far as like a power grab goes, especially in the time of COVID here. So it's like, and you know, they got into that with China and blah blah blah, and how they're possibly manipulating our news as well. So this isn't going away. Like I said, it's all too easy for somebody to post a meme that evokes a response and everybody goes insane and it's shared and blah blah blah. So I encourage everybody to watch that video. I encourage everybody to listen to Sam Harris. But what I want to talk about to end this podcast is, what do we do about this? Again, I've touched on the anecdote being you know, more skeptical, being our bigger critic of news. But I'm going to ask us all to go a step further and understand that the more we come back to the middle on a lot of this stuff, the better off we're going to be as a country. And I really wish we could unite. And if we all felt like we were getting duped by Russia, I feel like we'd unite over that. Like, if we realize that the string pulling, like, if they're, I could just vision, or I could visualize a great cartoon with, like, you know, Putin's really the guy pulling the strings to the marionette, and we're the marionette in this way. Like, we're just getting, or rather, we're like the idiots watching the marionette and believing it. And it's like, really, Russia is the one that's messing this up, or China in a different way. And they're the ones that are culturally causing a lot of this conflict, or at least seeding it. And then we go nuts with it. It's crazy. So like, if we can keep in mind neighborliness, as I've been trying to preach, and what really counts in this life, like being friendly to one another, going out of your way in your community, if you get into a conflict with somebody on social media, maybe reach back out. I know you're going to feel nasty about it. Everybody does. Reach back out to whoever that was and go, hey man, same team. Because we are. It is the same team. We all live in this great country. And the quicker we remind ourselves that it is in fact great, the better off we are. Now let's pretend it isn't great, by the way. Being at each other's throats doesn't help that at all. So like, regardless of if you think it's great, I think it's great. But if you don't, we still should take a step back, and we should still realize that unifying as people in like a real sense, not over a, hey, I'm going to post this Black Lives Matter fist in the air unifying video and everybody has to buy into this or we're not unified. It's like, no, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're Black Lives Matter, or if you don't quite understand that, who cares? We both live in this country and we both should be trying to see each other for who we are, not this silly like color of our skin thing, or what we maybe do on for fun, or whatever, however we're identifying each other, politics, whatever, and realize that like every person probably has something good to offer. And the quicker we can find that, and the sooner we can let go of this small differential between us, because usually it is pretty small. And the sooner we can realize that like, every, you know, different strokes for different folks. Like I live in kind of the rural part of America now. I came from a city. It's vastly different in how people live. That's okay. That's good. But that also means we're probably going to want different things. We're going to view things differently. And we need to come together and understand that that is an important part of America, that kind of tension, it can be a good thing if we utilize it in the right way. But overall, we can't let Russia, China, Iran, North Korea, whoever, put ourselves at each other's throats because it's exactly what they want. So I'm going to sign off with that. I hope you guys enjoyed this. I hope you guys have some thoughts on this. Email me, jeff.brines@gmail.com, if you want more, if you got some thoughts. If anybody gets to this point, I've been doing the free beer thing. I'm going to bring that back here. Text me, or Facebook message me, or email me. And if you get to this point in the podcast, I will legitimately buy you a beer virtually. How's that? Cheers, everybody.